We now turn to two political stories capturing our attention today. Just within the past hour, former NATO commander General Wesley Clark spoke in Little Rock, Arkansas, and made it official. He's pulling out of the race to be out of the Democratic race for the White House. And here in Washington, the Bush administration continues its defense of the president's military record. Yesterday, the White House provided documents that it said show Bush completed his National Guard service during the Vietnam War. Today, White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan had sharp words for critics, demanding more proof. Trolling for trash were his exact words. Joining me now here in Studio 3A is NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving. Good to have you with us, Ron.
Hello, Lynn.
Let's talk first about the event that just wound up in Little Rock. Wesley Clark dropped out of the Democratic race. Let's hear what he had to say.
When I got out of the Army, I said the fight was just beginning. I didn't know what I meant when I said it, but I had this incredible feeling that once out of uniform, that I'd get to see the country, I'd get a chance to speak out. And so 5 months ago, just a few miles from here, we began our journey. This was a journey for the presidency. It began with what I call the four no's. No money, no staff, no position papers, and a candidate with no political experience. And all we really had was hope, a lifetime of experience in leadership, and a vision for America. And today, after traveling across the country, after visiting with so many people, we have decided we're going to end this phase of this journey even more full of hope and even more committed to building a better America.
It was Wesley Clark just a short time ago dropping out of the Democratic race for the White House. Ron Elving, how's that going to change? How's this going to change the race now that Clark is out of it?
It's not going to change the race a great deal because Clark has stayed in as long as he had, and because that has had the effect of splitting a large portion of the vote that is not going to John Kerry among two, three candidates. And as a result, John Kerry has had the opportunity already to sweep more or less the important events up to this point and establish himself as the forbidding front runner for the nomination. Now, had Clark gotten out several weeks ago, it's possible that John Edwards might have been able to contest, for example, Virginia and Tennessee yesterday, and he might have been able to at least put a little bit of a break on John Kerry's dash to the nomination.
There's a lot of excitement around the Clark candidacy right in the beginning, but it just didn't seem to go anywhere, that excitement.
Well, I think the lesson that's been learned here in part is that Wesley Clark just began too late. You heard him a moment ago say 5 months ago. It's astonishing that somebody tried to put together a bid for the presidency in that short a period of time. Now, he was preparing somewhat before that five-month period, but he wasn't preparing enough. He was focused on being a commentator on the Iraq War for CNN. He had a lot of other things going on in his life besides the fact that he had, of course, spent 35 years of his life as a professional soldier, not necessarily preparing himself to be in the public eye in this fashion. And so to turn to it at this phase in his life, he simply did not come prepared enough and never looked like a ready candidate all through his campaign for the presidency.
Did we learn anything from this this run about outsiders trying to enter into the world of presidential politics this way?
Start early and have a lot of those things that Wesley Clark was just saying he didn't have when he began 5 months ago, money, position papers, professional staff, have those things and have them well established and tested well before you really hit the hustings to start going into some of the early states. And then I think the other lesson is that if you're an outsider, you must run in every state. You must run in Iowa. You must go out there and expose yourself to those voters. You can't pick and choose and say, well, I'm going to be the candidate of the South. By the time you get to the Southern primaries, you may have already been eclipsed.
Yeah. Clark's been pretty emotional about all this.
Remarkably so, really. You would think that with his military background and so on that he would be a little bit more stoic. But he has shown his emotions. I think he had outsized aspirations and ambitions in getting into this, and he's experiencing outsized disappointment.
Do you think the rest of the candidates are going to go all the way till the end?
No. I think we'll see a gradual parade of the candidates leaving. Certainly Joe Lieberman has already left, and Dick Gephardt before him, Carol Moseley Braun. Now, of course, the question will be, will Howard Dean stick around? He hasn't won any events. He's finishing in single digits in a lot of these events. He's clearly going nowhere. He's not going to be on the ticket. What's he running for at this point? What is he trying to fulfill in terms of his one-time front-runner campaign?
Yeah. Let's turn now to the story about President Bush's military record, and maybe you can give us a refresher course. What's in question, and did yesterday's release of documents do anything to clear it up?
Well, there's a big subject here in the sense of George W. Bush's youth and particularly what he did with regard to military service. And some people say, why was he in the National Guard instead of the regular Army, Air Force, or Navy? And some people will say, how did he get in the Guard? Did he have some kind of string pulling on behalf of his father, who was a former congressman, chairman of the Republican Party, nationally a big figure? That's not really what this controversy is about, although those subjects came up back in the 90s when George W. Bush first got into politics and ran for governor in 94, or first actually won a race in 1994. Those questions, I think, have been kicked around and will be sort of on the periphery. But what the focus has been by the more serious researchers into this question is whether or not he actually fulfilled his obligation in the National Guard, whether or not he showed up for duty when he was supposed to, whether or not he might have been somewhere he wasn't supposed to be or just not showing up for work, in essence. He did not show up for a physical exam in 1972, which meant thereafter, since it was a flight readiness, flight physical, as they call it, he was not allowed to fly after that point. He did not do some of the things that he would have been expected to do if he were really seriously dedicated to his National Guard service, or so it appears. It has even been alleged that for the last 1972, 1973, the late period of his Guard service or his Guard obligation, he really wasn't showing up to do much. Now, that's the significance of the White House records showing that he was paid for a lot of those dates. When he was on loan to the Alabama Air National Guard from his regular unit in the Texas Air National Guard during that 72-73 period, that would seem to indicate that he was paid for the days. He must have shown up, or at least that's what the White House wants us to conclude, although it's not entirely clear that people were never paid for days that when they didn't show up. And it's been alleged that it was possible, especially in that era, for people to occasionally get paid, even if they didn't strictly show up for each of the days they were paid for.
Ron Elving is NPR's senior Washington editor, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today's Washington Times, Ron, reports on an ex-girlfriend who says that she remembers President Bush, who was then not President Bush, the Bush reporting for duty in Alabama. How seriously are we going to be taking those kinds of comments?
Well, I don't think that it's necessarily any better evidence than the pay records, which indicate he was paid for going. Her comments to the Washington Times were essentially that she saw him for a couple of weeks in Montgomery, Alabama, during the period of time when he was coming back to make up some time he had missed. And she had dinner with him during that couple of week period a couple of times, several times. She said she never saw him go to work. She never saw him come home from work. She knew he was in Alabama. She knew he was in Montgomery. And she did not know of any other reason he would be there other than to clear up his owed time to the Alabama Air National Guard. So she supposes that's what he was doing, and that's what he told her he was doing. I don't know that this is going to be a terribly important piece of evidence. The thing that people keep asking is, why aren't there any other guys who were in it? And they were all men at the time. Why aren't there any other guys who were in the Alabama Air National Guard coming forward to say, yeah, I remember George W. Bush, sure, he was here. Or from the Texas, for that matter, saying, yeah, we remember him during that exact period of time. And instead what we have is the word of a couple of commanders from the Alabama unit who are now deceased saying that they don't remember him.
Yeah. It's interesting. John Kerry is not taking this issue up. He's saying this isn't my issue. And is that a good strategy for him, do you think?
Oh, I think it's most well advised for Kerry to leave this alone and let it be done by surrogates like the Democratic Party chairman Terry McAuliffe, who largely put it on the map here in the past month, and by the press. Unfortunately, Kerry isn't entirely or has not entirely followed that policy. He's made little side remarks like, well, an honorable discharge doesn't mean everything was fine. And, you know, really, he in a sense started all this by talking about knowing something about aircraft carriers for real. That was a reference to his own Navy service in contrast to that famous landing on May 1st on the aircraft carrier by George Bush.
Would this even be coming up if John Kerry were not now the Democratic frontrunner?
Probably not. The Democrats suddenly want to talk about military service. This is not usually one of the things that the Democrats are putting forward as a characteristic or quality of their presidential nomination or nominee, even though they've had presidential nominees, including George McGovern, who had rather distinguished military service, back to JFK, of course. But usually the Democrats are not initiating this particular fight, but they know they've got a guy here with a Silver Star and a Bronze Star and three Purple Hearts and an extraordinary war record.
On the other hand, the Washington Times ran a photo today that shows Senator Kerry in a 1970 anti-Vietnam War rally, and Jane Fonda's in that picture, too. Just how ugly is this going to get, Ron?
Well, things could get a lot uglier than Jane Fonda, after all. I think we'll see a lot of pictures of John Kerry with long hippie hair and hear all about his Vietnam veterans against the war period so as to inflame those who remember those years in that particular way and remember their anger against people who opposed the Vietnam War in that era.
Do you think this is going to be a nasty presidential fight?
I get the sense we're going to rehearse the 60s. We're going to relive the 60s. We're going to refight a lot of the Vietnam War era battles.
Okay. Thanks for being with us again today, Ron.
My pleasure, Lynn.
Ron Elving is the senior Washington editor here at NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary.